Welcome to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
And Mr. Rock, thank you very much for the intro. 8 minutes after 8 o'clock on our Friday, a wet Friday. Mr. Mayor, welcome aboard and good morning.
Wet. I don't know where you live, but at 5 this morning, it sounded like nuclear bombs going off outside.
I know. It was crazy. Yeah, coming in at 3:30
I had 15 more minutes to sleep, and I just kept my head down, although I can't say I woke up or fell back asleep.
Oh, well, that's what you're going to do.
Eliminating the drought. Listen, go to Arizona. And places like that,
they would welcome it.
Love to have it.
Those
fires can burn for another 3 or 4 weeks.
The immensity of those fires is hard to comprehend. The millions of miles.
And they've gone on Memorial Day, the big one starting. How long ago Memorial Day was?
It's hard to even comprehend. All right, you brought yourself in a baseball player.
There are times I feel that I should try to help those people that, you know, make a living in sports. And John Franco and I have bowled together. We've never played baseball together, but I've watched him.
One of the great relievers of all time.
I did an event with the Yankee first baseman, Tesoro. Nice guy. And, I tried to give him some tips.
Because I know you played baseball
big time,
right?
Anyways, John's here to talk about the Mayor's Cup.
What is the Mayor's Cup, and what's going on?
Well, the Mayor's Cup is a game going to be played at MCU Park tonight, as a matter of fact, weather permitting. And it's the top PSAL players in the city and the top Catholic school players in the city squaring off to play a championship game, to have bragging rights, mm-hmm. who is the best, the PSAL public schools or the Catholic schools. And some of the kids and some of the talent in the game tonight are extremely good players. I think that if anyone gets a chance, they should come out to MCU Park at 7 o'clock tonight and watch the game. These kids have worked very hard. Some of the boys on some or both of the teams have played ball with my son, so I know a couple of them. And they're very good players. Thomas Kane from Tottenville, a kid named Kraus from Tottenville, a kid named Anthony Pataglia from St. Joseph's by the Sea. These are all pretty good players, and I only wish that they had something like this when I was in high school. What we had was the Daily News All-Star Team, right. And you get a plaque, and that was it. I would have loved to have something like this with the Mayor's Cup, to where you could have bragging rights.
Is this new, or is it going on before?
It is for a number of sports first.
Right.
I mean, they have wrestling and baseball and basketball and lacrosse and track and field and tennis and chess. And it goes all year long, and there's different
competitions. And how are the kids chosen?
The kids are chosen by their peer, the coaches. And their players, and some, all-stars. They're all all-stars, top players on their team, pitching, who's got the best records. Tottenville has been in the league championship in and out for the last 4 or 5 years, along with Xaverian High School, a Catholic high school, that they've been on top of their game.
And the little leagues on Staten Island, too. They're always,
Island, the South Shore Little League has been into the Little League World Series.
Right, I've been twice to see it.
The baseball, what we're trying to do and what I'm trying to do as a kid from the city is bring baseball back, revitalize baseball a little bit more back here into the city and get involved, and trying to give the city kids the same opportunity that I had, and that the opportunity.
John's
to
a
play
real
ball.
City kid. Grew up in public housing and in the city.
Brooklyn.
I grew up in Brooklyn, and we're trying to get baseball back on the right track, and with the help of the mayor,
bring back Ebbets Field.
Yeah.
Well, not quite. They've got a nice little stadium over at Coney Island right now.
I'm the spokesman for MCU, so I'm pretty happy
Coney
about
Island,
that park.
And Coney Island is one of the big success stories in turning around an area. If you go back 5 years ago, it was pretty run down, is a nice way to phrase it. And record number of people last year. This year, if the weather cooperates on weekends, you should do even better. A lot more rides and things.
John, it must have been a hoot when, as a Brooklyn kid, to go play for the Mets.
Oh, it was great. I grew up a Met fan. My dad was an old Brooklyn Dodger fan, and once the Dodgers left, then I have an older brother who was a Met fan, and my dad was a Met fan. And I started out in Cincinnati, then got traded to the Mets and played there for 15 years, which was a dream come true. I got to play in the World Series against the Yankees in 2000. Unfortunately, we lost that series, but I did get the only win in that series. So it's something that you can, hang my hat on and say, I've had a great career, and now what I'm trying to do is give back to the city kids and trying to help them out. When I was a kid, they had the Mayor's Trophy game, where it was the Yankees and the Mets would play once a year, and they would get the trophy and put it in whatever, Yankee Stadium or Shea Stadium. So now we got the kids playing for bragging rights, which is a great thing.
That's good. What time is that tonight?
7 o'clock at the MCU Ballpark in Coley Island.
All right, John. Great to see you. Great to meet you.
Thanks for having me, and I appreciate it. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Are you going out there and you're going to take the field?
I want to try to get out there. I got a couple
other things. Just remember your age.
I don't think I can reach. From 40 feet, I can get anybody out right now. But I don't think from 60 feet.
That's funny. All right, John. Thank you very much. Mr. Mayor, why don't I take my break? We'll get that past that, and then we'll get into some conversation here. And, of course, if you've got a question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg, you know my number, 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Coming right back.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
It's getting to the point where I'm no fun anymore.
I am sorry.
Sometimes it hurts so badly I must cry out loud.
All right, this morning was Stevie Wonder Bumper Music Friday, but because you requested Crosby, Stills, and Nash, we're slipping it in here on our bumper music.
No, I think Crosby, Stills, and Nash is my generation.
Exactly.
That's the 60s and 70s.
I don't know. I don't know
you
why
don't
I have a
remember.
Well, of course I do remember. They're my generation as well. But I somehow don't envision little Michael Bloomberg listening to Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Big fan. Big fan in those days.
That's good. All right.
What are we going to talk about?
How about Albany? Did you make any headway on your pressing for gay marriage?
Well, I just hopefully I've made headway. And I said, look, you got to take a vote. Now, the public deserve democracy. I always thought the elected officials shouldn't hide behind, well, they didn't take a vote, therefore I am. Which way do you want me to be? Yeah, I'm that way. They should stand up and be on record, whether they vote the way I would like them to or not. Democracy, I think, is best served by elected officials explicitly saying what they stand for and why, and not trying to hide behind, well, you know, I didn't get a chance to express myself. I happen to think very strongly that this is not a religious thing. Religious organizations should have every right to decide who they want to marry, whether they want to permit alcohol, or, you know, religions do a lot of different things. This is the government, and the government should be separate from religion. And the civil marriage, which incidentally, in New York, we allow religious leaders to do simultaneously with a religious marriage, but you don't have to have a clergy person to marry you. You could have a justice of the peace or even the mayor and that sort of thing. And the civil side, government shouldn't discriminate. And the courts have held separate but equal is not equal. If you go back and look in this country, we started out, women couldn't vote or hold offices. If you didn't own property, you couldn't vote. African Americans were slaves. I mean, you go right down the list, and slowly over time, may have taken us a few hundred years, but we have eliminated again and again and again, sometimes in small steps, sometimes overnight, discrimination. And this is, it's just not the government's business. And what I tried to say to the people who were in the room who were more conservative, you know, conservative values are get government out of people's lives. And also, most of the people in that room really believe and say so publicly that they think marriage is a stabilizing force and good. And if you believe that, we allow gay couples to adopt kids. Why would you not want to let those kids' parents get married? Whose business is it? And why does anybody get hurt? That's what I don't understand.
All right, well,
it is controversial. I respect other people's views. But the bottom line here is either you think the government should start telling you what to do in the privacy of your home or you don't.
Did you talk with anyone about this rent control situation that has not been reinvigorated?
Well, I think that the one thing that's important for people to realize is nothing changes overnight. So the fact that the assembly passed a different, it really doesn't matter. They will come to an agreement before they leave Albany, probably next week rather than this week. This week is a few hours left. But they will come to an agreement, and it will be half a loaf for everybody. And that's democracy, and you try to do something in the middle to help most people, and there's a handful of outliers who may really aren't happy and may, in fact, get hurt. But that's the way a democracy comes together. And they'll do something. And I said, people say, well, specifically, what would you do? The governor and the legislature have a tough enough time without me weighing in on this. They know my views. I've expressed it to them.
But do you think rent control is important? I was surprised. I think over a million apartments in this city are controlled.
They're not controlled. They're stabilized. There's rent control isn't the old way, and it's fundamentally gone away. There's still some, and there's some abuses, but there's plenty of people get protected as well. It's rent stabilization that all of the argument is about, although people try to confuse the two. And there, the arguments are, on one side, you want to let people who've been here through tough times stay here. And if when things get good and lots of people want to live here and drive rents up, they couldn't afford to do it. You can say, well, wait a second, that's the marketplace. But that's the argument on that side. On the other side, if you don't let landlords make a living by investing in real estate, they're not going to invest in real estate, and we need housing. And in the end, it's coming out with some compromise. There has been a ways where rent-stabilized apartments go up certain percentage. There's a guidelines board that sets it. Everybody, when both sides yell and scream, you know you probably hit it right down the middle.
Or at least close, right?
But they're also, as apartments with the standard, with the raises that are allowed, once they get above a certain level and family income's above a certain level, then they become decontrolled. A lot of people think that's fair because the more wealthy, why should they get subsidized, or why should government get involved in holding them back? And other people don't feel that way.
It's my understanding that in many of the stabilized buildings, these are the buildings that have the oil burners that burn the dirty oil. Now, isn't there a conflict there from a price point of getting those changed out, having landlords that have the money and income to change those things out?
The issue, I don't know whether that's, you know, keep in mind, that's probably true, but has nothing to do with rent regulation, since the buildings
Correct.
Were built without.
But
you know,
there is a monetary
the issue
here.
When it comes to, well, it's a public policy issue of we want people to not pollute the air, let's say, or the water, or whatever you pick, but a public policy thing, and you say, okay, who should pay for it? You could argue the taxpayer, or you can pick a specific group, landlords, automobile drive owners, whatever, taxi drivers, airlines, and say, no, you are going to pay for it. We don't want to do it ourselves, but we're going to force you to do something. And you can argue that back and forth. In the case of something like this, the problems are who pays and who gets the benefit. Now, in the case of boilers, everybody gets the benefit if they burn cleaner oil, two oil rather than four or six oil, or natural gas, or have other kinds of heating. You can have solar, and solar even works in the city. You can do that. In the case of electricity, a lot of the things that save monies don't get passed on. So that the building owner says, I've got to pay to fix it, but the tenants are getting the benefit, and I don't have the ability to pass it on. And so we've changed some laws to let them allocate some costs down and try to align the beneficiaries with the payers and make it a little fairer.
Along the same line, in a parallel conversation, the city wants grocery stores and gas stations to be equipped to be able to be plugged in. There's a cost factor there as well. When the grid goes down, generators can be plugged in easily.
I asked about that yesterday.
Okay.
I saw an article in the paper.
Yeah,
and
is that not the case?
I as of yesterday, I don't know. I've asked Goldsmith to look at it because I did not realize that.
I mean, I certainly understand that would make some sense, but I was just curious about the cost involvement.
There is a point here where you've got to say, wait a second, the government can't tell companies how to run their businesses or they will leave. Now, what's called prevailing wage, which is basically a union rate, some companies will go out of business, some will move, some will still survive and do very well. But people can move. And there are an awful lot of companies where the city helps the company or helps the social service provider or whatever because they can't make it going on the way they're going now. And if you raise their rates, their salaries, it's just going to get worse. We're going to have to put more taxpayer dollars in. And the tax burden in New York is high. You know, when people say nobody's going to leave the state, roughly 5,000 New Yorkers pay 50% of the taxes, personal income tax. And when you look to say people don't leave the state, take a look and see where the checks go for pension benefits. A lot of people, not all, but a lot of people have moved out of the state to go to lower taxed places. And that's not good for us. We want people to stay here and contribute to our society and pay their taxes. So it's a balancing act. And, you know, if everybody's screaming, I suppose it probably is, you said before, right?
Did you see the story this morning about the 9/11 museum and charging? Now, this is the museum, not the memorial.
Well, the money's got to come from someplace. Where would you like to?
I'm just looking for reaction. I'm not making a comment.
You know,
one way
I'm
the
chairman of the board of the foundation, and we've raised close to $400 million privately, and the people that gave all that money, I think you can certainly say maybe they should be able to get in for nothing.
I would think so. Yes,
but you know, and maybe you could make the case for family members. It's, you know, just a compassion kind of thing. It has nothing to do with whether they can afford to pay. But one way or another, the taxpayers just keep saying, I do not want any more taxes, and we're going to make some choices between fewer fire companies, fewer teachers, fewer service workers in all different parts of city government. And if you don't want more cuts, then we got to find a different source to pay for something like the memorial. And, you know, given people pay $12-15 to go to the movies in a lot of parts of the city.
$500 to go see a Broadway show.
So if you have a nominal charge that helps pay the bills, I certainly have no objections to that.
By the way, as I keep telling you and repeating, is I walk by this World Trade Center site every single day, twice a day. It is just amazing what is going on there.
It's been going on for 10 years. Yeah. That's what
you're, but all of a sudden,
stuff,
you see it.
Because most the things that take the most time are the things you don't see. It's all of the legal and approval and environmental battles. It is all of the design. Then it's all the work underground. And then it's all the work once the building's up and clad that goes on inside. The one thing that goes quickly, 9 days a floor for the big building, week for the others, bang, 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 goes up. You say, where were they? What do you mean, where were they? That's just not real.
But they're rushing like crazy because of 9/11 10-year anniversary coming up.
Well, that's the memorial. The other stuff won't be done.
Correct. But, I mean, even just around the edges.
On schedule, on budget. Chris Ward has done a great job, and as everybody else. And this is, when they write the history book, I don't think anybody will, they'll be able to find an example of as complex a project with as many different stakeholders, New York, New Jersey, state, city, federal, families, insurance companies, lawyers, owners. This will turn out to be one of the best done, fastest, most efficient, and safe jobs done. We lost two firefighters when the Deutsche Bank building was coming down. But I think those are the only deaths in a project. Construction's a dangerous job, so just the statistics say we're doing pretty well on that. And it'll get done. I was giving Inouye, the senator from Hawaii, World War II vet, lost an arm in World War II, and I was giving him a tour, and he said, "Now, let me get this right. You're going to have this ready for the 10th anniversary," thinking he's going to complain. He said it took 50 years for the World War II memorial to be built. He thought this was the most wonderful thing in the world. He couldn't believe anybody could get this done. So where you stand depends on where you sit.
Exactly.
And some perspective on history, which people don't seem to have.
Always forget about that. Mr. Mayor, sit tight. We'll be right back. Let me take a break again. Looking at the board here, we've got a few open lines. 800-321-0710 open for your questions. Joe Bartlett at 832.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the John Gambling Show. News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
One morning I woke up and I knew it was all. A new day, a new way, and new eyes.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Bumper Music Friday during the Mayor's Show here on the John Campbell Group.
Come on, you know.
I love it. I don't, no, I'm not making fun of it.
Do you want me to pick some music for next week?
No.
Okay.
Simple as that. Now we'll leave it the other way I pick it. All right, 22 now before 9 o'clock in the morning. The budget, obviously, the clock continues to tick to the end of the month.
We'll have an on-time budget with
what
the
happened
council?
With the union-controlled health insurance stabilization fund idea about making up the differential?
Well, there is this fund that the city puts $35 million into each year, and it's a very complex thing, but it had to do with the fact that there are two different health care providers, HIP and GI, whatever it is, and it's a long, complex thing done many years ago. And there's $500 million sitting in the fund, and there's no prospect that it's going to ever be used for anything, and it just sits there. And so the Harry Nespoli, the head of the sanitation workers, who they change every couple of years. He runs the Municipal Labor Council, and they, the MLC, and somebody, he or his group had the idea, why don't we use some of that, and we'll pick up the tab for so that we don't have to lay off members of DC 37, which is one of the bigger unions that has lots of different people and lots of different agencies across the city. We wouldn't have to close some fire companies. We wouldn't have to lay off teachers. And there's some other agencies also. This is through the whole city. There's lots of layoffs because we just don't have the money. And somehow or other, I think one or two of the unions said, well, we're not getting enough, and so we're not going to vote for it. Now, whether they stick to that or not, I don't know. But
I mean, it's not dead, dead, dead.
You
Talk
know,
to them.
Nothing's dead, dead, dead until it's done. But I was with the mayor of Charlotte, North Carolina yesterday. They're laying off 500 teachers. They have 3,000 or 4,000 teachers. It's an enormous percentage. You saw Rahm Emanuel, the new mayor of Chicago, said we're just not going to give the raise that we had promised before. We can't afford it. Cities across the country and states are all of a sudden saying we gave benefits in a better period. Maybe we didn't think about what would happen if the economy turns down, because nobody ever thinks the economy is going to turn down. But it did turn down. And if you take a look, there's not a lot of evidence across this country that the economy is booming. Economists will argue about whether it's stabilized or starting to go down again, but nobody makes a case that it's going very far up. And so they said, we're not going to be able to afford this. And everybody's got to. And, you know, they made a big deal about Wisconsin, where the Republicans are in control. Illinois, Massachusetts, the Democrats are in control, and they're doing the similar kinds of things.
Have to ask you about Anthony Weiner resigned.
Time to get on with it. You know, all along I kept saying the country has enormous problems, immigration, health care, deficits. We just talked about some of the problems, creating jobs, keeping people in their houses. That's what we've just got to focus on, and not what any individual congressman does. And if you look at all the coverage of that compared to the amount of coverage on the issues which will keep you in your house and keep you employed and get an education for your kids and keep your family safe on the streets, that gets no coverage. Now, what the newspapers would say is that's what people want to read. That's what people buy. You know, newspapers are very democratic. They put Monica Lewinsky on the cover until they don't sell newspapers or magazines, and they take her off. It has nothing to do with Monica.
No, I completely understand. We do the same thing in radio. We are a business.
I'm shocked.
We are a business. The business of schools is your business. Graduation rates, you talked extensively this week about, and I had a direct conversation with Dr. Merrill Tisch, who's the head of the Regents, about the not the lack of competency when it comes to the work in college.
Okay. Number one, the good news is, and it's spectacular news, every year for the last 5 years, the graduation rates have gone up for New York City kids, and compared to the rest of the state, they've gone up dramatically. And the reason that you want to do the comparison is there's always an argument, and I don't know if it's true or not, experts tell me no, but who knows, that the tests get easier with time. But the tests get easier for everybody because everybody in the state takes the same test. So if we improve vis-a-vis the rest of the state, our teachers, our principals, our parents, our kids, our school safety officers, parent coordinators, everybody in the system, the administrators, they got to be doing something right. So, and that's a very good measure. And is it perfect? And is it, are you where you want to be? No. But the first thing is they're doing a good job. And to try to disparage it, why would somebody want to keep working hard if every time they make an improvement, it's never enough, and therefore you're no good? Come on. These are people who've worked as hard as anybody and have made real progress. And for those that say, well, the high school diploma, they aren't as prepared as they should be, that I'm sure is true. No argument about that. We do a lot of remedial work in junior college and college. But keep in mind, there are a lot of jobs that you can't get unless you have a high school diploma. So the fact that these kids are earning it, they're the opportunities that are open to them compared to what the opportunities they would have had if you go back 5 and 10 years is amazing. And so I'm just, you know, the bottom line is getting a high school diploma is a big deal. Getting the high school diploma when others aren't getting it or our improvements compared to the rest of the state is a big deal. And nobody disagrees that they don't have all of the skills. But, you know, this proficiency or college ready, those are arbitrary cut points that somebody just makes up. I'm in favor of those arbitrary cut points and raising them every year. I think you should always raise them. Nobel Prize winners continue to study. When parents say, well, how much does my kid have to learn? There's no answer to that. They have to learn more, whatever level they are, whether they're the valedictorian of Stuyvesant or some poor kid just struggling to desperately get over the cut point and get his high school or her high school diploma. They all have to keep going. And we, you know, the press or the advocates say, oh, no, this is proficiency. This is what really matters. Compared to everybody else, that's a measure. But, you know, who do you compare New York kids to? America? The world? I mean, America as a whole used to be in the top 10, 5, 6 in science and math and all the history. And I mean, today we're in the 30s. Public education in all of America vis-a-vis the rest of the world. Now, is it getting worse in America or are the others getting better? It doesn't make any difference. It's a global world and the competition for jobs is going to be from everybody. But to sit here and to criticize the progress that the teachers and the students have made, and you know, we've increased the graduation rate by 40%. And black and white kids who black and Latino kids who traditionally have scored a lot worse, they've closed a very big. They're growing at a faster rate, still way behind, but making a big bunch of progress here. And to constantly nothing's good enough is not the ways to get people to put their shoulder to the plow, or whatever the expression is, and work harder and be proud of what they've done. And they have every reason to be proud of what
Merrill
they've
Tisch,
done. And that doesn't mean that we're where we are.
Dr. Tisch made a very interesting point and looked at this from a slightly different point of view. And as the head of Regents, that's what her job is. She said that a lot of these kids are going to community colleges. They're borrowing the money to go there, and they are in remedial classes until for almost the first 2 years,
right.
And they run out of money. So they never sort of get to that next place. She was looking at it from a resource.
Well, okay,
point
but
of view.
But at least they are learning more. I mean, we are starving our public schools, colleges, and junior colleges across this country. Take a look, California. California had the world's greatest public education system at a graduate and college level, and they're just devastating it. This is not what America needs to be competitive down the road. And yes, we have to find ways to make junior colleges and four-year colleges work better. We have this ASAP program in the community colleges here, which gives you the chance to have all of your classes in the same time period. Little things. A lot of kids that go to junior college have family obligations. They have to work or they have to take care of family, whatever. And we've had a crazy system where some of the classes are in the morning you have to have, some you have to have in the afternoon, some are in the evening, some are on weekends.
Which precludes for a lot of people.
Yeah. So the ASAP program, you commit to a time slot, we'll make sure all of your courses are in that. And it's working, and the graduation rates are astronomical in that group. And now it's also kids that really want, you know, some people go to junior college just to, you know, want to study philosophy. I'm interested. Nothing wrong with that. Not everybody that goes to college wants to get a degree. It's continuing education, enhancing skill sets for jobs, or it's just intellectual stimulation. They just want to know something, and that's all great. But I think just this constant, it's never good enough, is not the way you excite people and incentivize people. And, you know, if we start tearing each other down again and again and again, eventually you do some real damage.
All right. A lot of kids going to summer school more than last year.
Yes. And remember, we ended social promotion. If you can't do the work, you're not going to graduate. If you take a kid in one grade and they can't do the work, moving them to the next grade up is about as dumb a thing as you could do. They're going to get frustrated. They're going to drop out. They're going to stop paying attention, become discipline problems. Every one of us would get bored if the person in the front of the room is babbling on and we can't understand anything. You got to learn to do the work, and that's been very successful.
Did you see the story about, let me get his name right here, Councilman James Sanders, and the story about his taxi ride trying to go to Yonkers from Manhattan?
Yes.
Horrible.
It is horrible. And David Yasky, the head of the TLC, Traffic and Limousine Commission, is trying to do something about that. We enforce the law. We'll go after that driver. Assume Sanders was smart enough to get the cab number and that sort of thing. And keep in mind, with GPS, we know where the cab was and all of that sort of stuff. But this is an outrage. If you have we give a license, a medallion, sell it to people, that gives them the right to operate a cab on the streets. And if you have, if you're doing that, you have an obligation to serve everybody. Okay. And that's, you know,
all right,
an outrage.
You've got some tweets, I am sure. We've got some telephone calls. We'll get to those in just a moment, 10 minutes before 9 o'clock. If you've got a question, Mike's got a line open, 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710. Right back.
Mayor Mike and John Gambling on News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
Just a song before I go, to whom it may concern.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Bumper Music Friday on the Michael Bloomberg edition.
You're really carried away with this bumper music thing.
Well, just on Fridays. We just do it on Fridays. It's just a little different.
It's nice all the time, you know.
Well, no, it would become a burden.
Why?
It wouldn't be special.
You don't have to sing it or play it. All you do is punch a button, and somebody else even does that for
you.
Now,
do you have an iPod? Or on your phone, do you have music?
Yes. Do I listen to it?
No. Not very often?
Not very often. In the car, I have Sirius XM.
Yeah, okay.
And I keep the 60s and 70s.
You don't listen to... I thought you listened to...
To John Gamble, because I'm here all the time.
6 before 9 o'clock, Mr. Mayor. We got some folk on the phone here. I've got Allegra in Manhattan. Allegra, what's your question for the mayor?
Oh, hey. Good morning, gentlemen. Hope you're doing well today.
Thank you. What's your question?
I've got a great idea to cut some unnecessary expenditures from the city budget, and that would be to get the fluoride out of the water. I read that the DEP puts fluoride in the New York City water at the request of an ancient city code. How much does this cost the city? If anybody wants to use fluoride, there's enough inexpensive products, and a lot of us realize that it's a carcinogenic neurotoxin, and we don't want to be forced to use it.
Allegra, there's no evidence that it's a carcinogenic neurotoxin. This is considered, fluoride in the water is considered one of the 10 most successful public health successes in the history of medicine. It costs next to nothing, I think $7 million a year for all of New York City. And it saves enormous number of teeth and reduces expenses at the dentist. And there are a number of things like that, iodine and salt also to prevent some other diseases. There are a number of simple prophylactic things you can do, and fluoride in the water is one of those things that I don't know, unfortunately, who's telling you this stuff. It's just not true. There's no science behind it whatsoever, and it's one of those good things.
All right. Thank you very much, Allegra. Let's see here. Chris in Staten Island, your question for the mayor.
Yes, Mayor Bloomberg. I'm one of the millions of Americans who feel the original towers, Twin Towers, should have been rebuilt. My question is, the new Freedom Tower will only have an inside observation deck. I feel it should have an outside observation deck. It's going to be the largest skyscraper in New York City. And the Port Authority told me that in the future it could always be added on. I feel it really should be done, and I want to know, what kind of leeway do you have? You know, what kind of powers do you
have? It's number one, it's the Port Authority. The city doesn't have any say. And number two, I think Silverstein probably owns it. But you should address your interests to the Port Authority. It's an interesting idea. You know, people love to get that view. I remember being in the Twin Towers, windows on the world, and their observation decks, many, many times after it was built. And there was a wow factor and a great tourist attraction. And for not just tourists, but New Yorkers who wanted the view. Why they didn't put one there must have been a business decision. But you can write to the Port Authority and, tell them. If you get enough people behind it, they probably would do it. I have no objections to it. I just have no say.
Okay,
and if they had it, I'd probably go look at it. Well, I guarantee I'd go look at it.
You got a tweet there?
I do.
on your iPad?
Somebody has asked, Joe Doe has asked why there is no help for small businesses. And in fact, there is help. We've cut business taxes, small business taxes off a lot. We're also working... Deputy Mayor Goldsmith has got a whole project going, Sherry Hyman's actually running it, that is reducing the permitting time for, started with restaurants, and then we'll do other small businesses. We're making a lot of progress. If you want to open a restaurant, you could rent the store, and it could take you up to a year to get all of the inspections and permits. We've got that down to well under 2 months, and we're going to people used to have to hire an expediter. In fact, the city, at one point, I remember reading someplace, hired expediters to deal with their own agencies. Now, we're going to have a free expediter built in. You call us, and we're going to pull it all together. So there's a lot of things. We really do care about small businesses. Small businesses that will create jobs. And if you think about it, small businesses select their employees in a non-traditional way. A big business checks your transcript and does big background checks and looks at your Facebook and Twitter and all that sort of stuff. A small business, they look at you, they talk to you, and they say, hey, I think the guy can do a job. We'll take a shot with him. Small businesses also have very much more flexible in terms of work hours and days, which a lot of people need. And small businesses provide on-the-job training. And remember, if you drop out or you need more training and you're older, the statistics say very unlikely that you'll go back to school. So for those reasons, small businesses really fit the needs of the unemployed. And lastly, medium-sized big businesses use technology to find ways to do more with less. Small businesses typically don't. They are hands-on kinds of businesses, or they just don't have the technology. The economics don't make any sense for them to get the technology, at least at the moment. And so small businesses are labor-intensive. Big businesses are trying to be less labor-intensive. Our problem in the economy right now is creating jobs. And so where half the people in the country work for companies of 100 or less, we have to go in this country and focus on small business and all of Washington's focus on big business. Yes, it's great, but I saw the other day somebody wrote a column, Hoover Dam. They said, our infrastructure is no good. Let's build a Hoover Dam. Well, Hoover Dam probably only employed 5,000 people at cost of billions of dollars. And today it would do it with a lot fewer people because you have a lot more technology than when Hoover Dam. We need to improve our infrastructure. We need to have more innovation. We need to have green jobs, but those aren't the solutions for the unemployment. Those are things the economy and the country desperately needs, but we're confusing two things. Generally speaking, the ways we're going to get out of this is small business.
All right, we got to get out of this, Mr. Mayor. Let you go here. You got work to do, but thank you as always, and we'll see you next Friday.
Looking forward to it.
All right, thank you. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show.